Welcome to Organized Crime and Punishment, the best spot in town to hang out and talk about history and crime, with your hosts, Steve and Mustache Chris.
Welcome back to a really special episode of Organized Crime and Punishment. This episode, we are going to wrap up season one of Organized Crime and Punishment, where we really talked a lot about the murder involved with the mafia. And the way we're going to wrap it up is a little game we're going to play, game show style, of serial killer or mafia member. So we're joined by our crew member, Frank Scalise. I believe we've recorded other episodes with Frank, but this is the first time you're actually meeting Frank. It's kind of weird the way that lined up, but this is our first introduction to Frank. You're going to learn a lot more about Frank in future series. We are also joined by none other than our very own Mustache Chris. And Mustache Chris is going to take the hosting duties today, and he is going to be our host in our game show of Mafia Member or Serial Killer.
Yeah, we came up with this idea, and we thought it'd be a little bit fun. And then we got in touch with Frank and figured, you know, this would be a good episode to have Frank come on for. And this is one of those tougher questions when it comes to the mob, but I suppose crime in general, like the difference between, say, a mafia hitman and a serial killer can become pretty blurry. Like many mob hitmen have a much higher body count than most serial killers. You know, mob hitmen also are notorious for cutting up the bodies after the fact to help, you know, with the help have them not get caught, obviously, right? You know, throwing the body parts in dumps and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is many of the mob hitmen, they enjoyed killing people, and some of them it comes across like they just kind of saw it as a job. You know, if you look at the likes of, say, Harry Strauss or Roy DeMeo, we were looking at, you know, body counts that go high above even the Green River Killer, who I believe still in American history has the highest body count. You know, the typical argument that I find is people say, serial killers enjoy, sadistically killing their victims, whereas mob hitmen tend to just get the job done as quickly as possible. And I think, for the most part, that generalization is correct, but there's examples where it doesn't entirely fit. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, this is Frank here, saying hello to your audience for the first time. We'll chat some more in future episodes, but for this one, I think I would say that the difference between a serial killer and a mob hitman is a matter of compulsion. I think that most people and let me back up a step. I think you could clearly label a mob hitman as a serial killer by the letter of the definition. I mean, they meet the criteria. But I think in popular parlance, when we say serial killer, you're not talking about a mob hitman, you know? And so the difference to me is that compulsion. A serial killer kills from a very deep place that they're compelled to do so for sadistic and psychological reasons that are pretty terrible. And while I guess some hitmen might enjoy their work, I think it's a job first and a hobby second. And it's not that way for a serial killer at all.
And I should mention, even though we will more properly introduce Frank in future episodes, Frank's not just shooting from the hip here. Frank was a 20-year career police officer and a crime fiction writer. So he definitely comes to this with some cred.
Although I was never a homicide investigator, so I might just be full of crap.
But I have to agree with Frank on this, is that I think it comes from a different place. Like you said, there's probably mafia hitmen and people in that who enjoy killing, but it's not their the killing for enjoyment, I think, comes secondary to the business aspect. I mean, I haven't seen many studies of this, but there are people who were in the military who kind of blurred the line. And I think in any business where killing is a part of the, is basically a job requirement, you're going to draw in some people who might not be there for the best of intentions, but it still is the secondary aspect of it.
Yeah. And also think, like, if you look at some examples of serial killers, they tend to like inflict like extreme sadistic pain on their victims, or do, you know, entirely weird things with the bodies afterwards. Or, like you say, you look at somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer, and Dahmer, his whole MO was, I wanted to get the killing as over as quickly as possible. He didn't like that part of it, but he would make works of art with the bodies. He would, you know, eat them, right? From all I've read about the mob, I haven't come across a hitman that did stuff like that. But then we consider, say, somebody like David Berkowitz is considered a serial killer. And what did he do? He just simply just walked up to people in cars or on the streets and shot them. And that's, you know, that's all he did.
But as serial killers go, he's kind of a little bit of an oddball. I mean, not all serial killers, for sure, but a lot of them have a sexual component to their killing. Even if they're not doing those acts, there's a psychosexual component there, kind of melded with the whole power dynamic and everything else. And so, you know, I you're the expert on the mob stuff, but I don't know if there's too many mob guys that, even if they're enjoying the power of being a killer and taking a life, I don't know that they're getting a sexual thrill or satisfaction out of it.
Not too many. Like there's, we just finished a series on Murder Inc. And one of the guys was, he enjoyed it. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. He was a sexual predator, right? And he enjoyed it. I'm trying to think of, his name is escaping me right now, but Paulie from, the movie Goodfellas. The actual character, Paul Vario, he was, I believe he was convicted of rape twice. There was no component there, but it's not something that I've come across a ton of, but there are examples of, there are a few examples of it.
So would you be willing to say that it's more of the outlier than the rule?
Yeah, I would say I would say the rule is, like, as Frank pointed out, serial killers kind of have a compulsion. I would say serial killers enjoy inflicting like kind of a sadistic pain on their victims, and, you know, or doing weird things after the fact with the body. And there's a sexual component to it all, right? That goes kind of, well, I mean, it's a dominance factor, obviously, right? But I believe it goes a little bit further than that. I would say that's generally the rule, the difference between, say, a hitman and like a serial killer. But there's examples, outliers, like David Berkowitz is an example of this. I mean, you look at somebody like Roy DeMeo, and depending on who you're talking to, this guy maybe killed up towards 150 people. Now, he was doing it strictly as business, like you could say, but he was definitely enjoying what he was doing. But there's always kind of exceptions to the rules. And that's why I kind of find it a little bit of a fascinating subject, because it's those exceptions that makes you pause and think and go, you know, could we, like, it's weird that we don't consider Roy DeMeo as the highest body count and, you know, for killing in the United States, but we consider the Green River Killer. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to think about. Just to me, I mean, yeah, he was killing other criminals. He wasn't killing prostitutes and defenseless women, but I mean, he was still killing people.
To me, it really boils down to the job aspect of it. And obviously, I disagree with that it's a criminal job and it's bad, but it was still a job function for him, and he did get enjoyment out of his work. But then you see, like, somebody like Roy DeMeo, towards the end, he seemed psychologically damaged by his lifestyle, where I think most of the serial killers, and I'm no expert in that by any stretch of the imagination, but any of the serial killers that I've seen are not psychologically damaged by the things that they've done. They're quite almost the they're proud of it when they get busted.
Yeah, if anything, it's fulfilling something that they need to fulfill, or they feel like they need to fulfill. It's almost the opposite.
I mean, the Green River Killer, when he got caught, he was like chumming it up with the police, like he was, you know, like they were finally on the same team or something. Like he had no idea. And Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, he was kind of the same way. Like he just didn't. It was like, oh, the game's up now.
Yeah, and then there's like even another example as a curveball. You know, you look at somebody like the Zodiac Killer. You know, they never found out who it was, but he's like a mixture where like he would like, I don't know, he would like tie people up and like make them wait for a while, and then like there's other times he just straight up shot people, and it's like, I don't know what's going on there. That one's always kind of perplexed me. I'm not entirely convinced it was one guy that did all of that, but I think it might have been couple different people that use like the Zodiac thing to make the police think that maybe it was one guy doing it all. But I'm not a police officer. I didn't investigate the case, but I'm just using it as an example.
I was doing some research quite recently for one of the books I'm working on now. And I was curious, like, how many serial killers are solo and how many, you know, how many partner up? And as best I could find with the assistance of Detective Google, it's about 10% of serial killers are multiples, or couples usually. And they're more often romantic couples than not, but not always. So 90% of serial killers are lone wolves is what it comes down to there.
Yeah, which with a lot of the case with Mob Hitman, they're not doing it by themselves. They're using... I mean, it's usually one person doing the hit, but it's usually multiple people in terms of disposing the body and even setting up the hit.
And that probably is a psychological way to boost up each other's confidence to do something that's really unnatural for most people, is to kill another human being.
Well, I mean, it's a perverse way of looking at masculinity that's in the mob, right? They call it making your bones, right? But like, you know, you got to be a real man, you know, kill somebody and not care about it. In a lot of ways, it's kind of how cults work, right? Like they break you down, right? And then they screw up your sense of morality and instill their own sense of morality. I mean, I'm not saying that the mob is a cult, but in terms of like alternative societies and say, I don't know, use an example like the Freemasons, right? Secret societies. This is kind of what they do to people. It's kind of necessary to really join it.
All right, with this prelude, why don't we jump into your first scenario, Chris, where you explain a situation and then Frank and I are going to try and decide whether it is a serial killer or a member of the mafia, and we will be keeping score.
You didn't tell me we were keeping score.
We have a man that is hanged on a meat hook by his feet, and then has his face wrapped in wrappings that have been smeared in gonorrhea discharge, causing him to go blind. You had to guess, was this the mob job or was this done by a serial killer?
Now, Steve, you want to alternate who goes first so that we keep it fair?
I'll let you go first, Frank, because I remember this one. This one really stuck with me. So
this sounds very vengeful, and it sounds like something somebody would do to make a point. Like maybe they saw something they shouldn't see or something. It sounds to me like a mob hit and not the work of a serial killer.
I'm going to go with serial killer. I'll give Frank a head start on this one.
This was done by the mob. This is actually done by Dutch Schultz and his partner quite early in his career. So I guess we'll go on to question two.
Did you actually know that one? And did you throw that round?
I threw that one for you.
Oh, that's bull, man. No, I'm amending the score.
All right, we'll call this one a wash. 1-1.
Score is 1-1. I don't want any handicaps. If I win, I want it to mean something. If I lose, I want it to be real.
Even though we're from all over North America, once one of us lands in one of our areas, we'll owe each other one a beverage of their choice.
That sounds like a fair bet to me.
Steve here again. We are a member of the Parthenon Podcast Network, featuring great shows like Josh Cohen's Eyewitness History and many other great shows. Go to Parthenon Podcast to learn more. And now, here is a quick word from our sponsors.
All right, so question two. When asked what happened to the body after it was shot, this person in a deadpan fashion simply replied, "I cut his heart out." If you had to take a guess, was this a reply from a serial killer or a mob member?
I'm up first for this one. I'm going to say that sounds very mafia-like to me. I'm going to cut out your hearts. Unless, yeah, I'm going with mafia.
Yeah, I have to agree. That sounds like a cold, hard hitman who is taking care of business for the capo.
It was actually, yes, it was Dutch Schultz again. He shot his former bodyguard, and his lawyer saw him do it. And the lawyer actually later saw that the body was somewhere on the side of the road. And the newspaper was saying that the heart had been ripped out, and he goes to Dutch. What's going on here? Like, I saw you shot him, kill him, but what's with the heart? And he's just like, "Oh, I ripped his heart out. Don't worry about it.
Forget about it. I cut out his heart. Forget about it."
Dutch really did walk the line.
Yeah, he really did. Like, he's crazy. On to question three. Here we have a man that was kidnapped and then tortured for hours, being sodomized, cut up, and then was ritualistically killed in a human sacrifice. If you had to guess, was this done by a serial killer or the mob?
Well, unless this was the Familia Satanis or something, you know, I it doesn't sound very mob-like to me. This sounds like a serial killer and maybe a devil worshiper, a little satanic panic coming true here. So I'm going to go with serial killer on this one.
Yeah, I think I have to go with serial killer, the same one. That's very, very bizarre. And I could see maybe Arthur Flagenheimer might go, he'd go maybe 80%, but I don't think he'd go full 100% of that scenario.
Well, I got to break it to you guys. You guys are both wrong. This was actually done by Adolfo Constanzo, and he was famous for running a drug cartel in Mexico that also was a cult that ritualistically sacrificed their victims. And the guy that he killed was Mark Kilroy. He was an American, and this is eventually kind of what brought this drug cartel down. Kind of reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Predator 2. Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit like this Mexican drug cartel that was also like a human sacrificing, devil worshiping cult is, I'll be completely honest with you, I'm surprised more people don't know about it just because it's such a crazy story. I mean, there's a movie about it too, and I haven't watched the movie. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Yeah, is the movie Sicario? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's it's Sicario. I watched
some mass murder going on in that movie.
Yeah, they killed like a number, like a fair amount of people in this fashion, and it kind of reminds me of that movie Predator 2 with the Jamaican voodoo gang that's. I don't know. They're like ripping people's hearts out and stuff like that. I don't know if you guys seen the Predator 2 of Danny Glover.
Yeah.
That's kind of reminds me of a little bit.
When was that approximately then, that murder? And when did they operate?
1989 was when they killed Mark Kilroy. And this is the one that was the murder. That was the thing, is they went after Americans, and that's pretty much like as soon as they found the body and stuff like that, and they found out what was going on, the Americans are like, "Okay, we got to take care of this." If they had maybe just stuck to other Mexicans, they who knows how long they would have been around for. I mean, it's crazy to think like these guys were bringing in like crazy amounts of money, running a cartel. They had tons of weapons. They're all high on blow. and they're devil worshippers. You know, it's almost like they're channeling the old Aztec spirit or something like the old Aztecs, like ripping hearts out and stuff.
There was a video game, it wasn't Call of Duty, it was Ghost Recon in Ecuador, that was about a fictionalized cartel gang that had like a worship of, it was a like Catholic worship, but with like
Wildlands was devil. The name of the game.
Pardon?
Wildlands is what
it's such
about.
A good game.
Yeah.
And it's loosely based on a Mexican gang. And I think they just, that gang that it was loosely based in just had like a really nasty hit in Mexico within a couple of months of our recording, maybe even a couple of weeks. So that kind of stuff is still going on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, it's I just thought that would be, because it sounds totally like something that, you know, serial killers were doing, but it was actually a drug cartel that was doing it. I mean, and it shows you kind of like the blurry lines where, like, 100% I would consider this guy a serial killer. But I mean, he was running a drug cartel. He was also running a cult. It's just one of those outliers that kind of blurs the lines between what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like the purpose of what they were doing had anything to do with their mob activity. So I'm going to ask the judges to reconsider if we're actually wrong or not.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. To me, you call them either one, right? I mean, you know, they're running the cartel to help fund the devil worshiping cults. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. It's crazy to me. Like, people are so dismissive of stuff like the... Just a little bit of a tangent, like some of the stuff that like gets talked about, like during the satanic panic. And then you know, you start digging into it a little bit and you start realizing it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, like, some people are acting crazy, but like a lot of the stuff, I don't know if they were acting totally crazy. You know, this would be something that I think people would just dismiss out of hand if I had to say, told somebody at work, I'm like, oh yeah, did you know about this like devil worshiping drug cartel that was like ritualistically sacrificing human beings? It would have been like, oh yeah, Chris, you're just pulling her leg. You're screwing around, you know, like that didn't happen. It's like, no, it did. And it probably is still going on now. I'm sure there's weird like secret societies in some of these cartels. They're so big, you know, it's very difficult to probably, you know, keep an eye on everything that's going on in them.
I'd say give us a half a point for that one, 2.5 to 2.5.
Yeah, I guess.
Pays to complain.
Yeah. So, yeah, number four. Here we have a man that was very meticulous about how he went about his work. This man carried a special toolkit around with him at all times that he would help him dismember bodies. He would make sure that each body part was either wrapped in plastic or were put in suitcases and buried deep enough so that dogs couldn't find them. This person had one weakness, though, and that was he enjoyed keeping personal items of the victims that he killed. Was this a mob guy or was this a serial killer?
Who's up for this one first?
You got evens.
Okay. You know what? I think for me, keeping the personal mementos, like everything, I think any one of those things, or maybe like two or three of them, could have been, oh, that's a mafia guy. But I think the totality of that, I'm going with serial killer.
Gosh, you make a great point there, Steve. You know, carrying the tool around sounds like a professional mob guy that's just, you know, ready to rock and roll as soon as he needs to. The meticulous nature of how he dismembered and stored the bodies and buried them so they wouldn't be discovered, which is a little bit interesting because while serial killers tend to be really careful, sometimes they get sloppy on purpose. Like, I mean, they want people to know these people got killed and not know who did it. That's part of the power rush. So he's trying to avoid being discovered. But that keepsake thing, that is a hallmark of serial killers. So you are bang on there. So for the purposes of breaking the tie one way or the other here, I am going to go with the mobster.
Well, Frank, you're right.
Oh.
That's Tommy Karate, who's a famous Bonanno hitman. He's also got the nickname Tommy Karate because he was really good at karate too. And he studied in Japan and the whole deal, and he was really physically fit. he would keep personal items of the people that he killed, which
is totally a serial killer thing to do.
He really enjoyed what he did, right? I don't know. You know, was he, to me, that sounds like a serial killer. I mean, he was getting paid to do it. But it's one of those examples where it's just like, oh, so was he a hitman or was he, you know, was he just a serial killer that was getting paid?
I think the only thing that would make the difference in my mind in this situation here is, was he choosing his victims or were they being assigned to him? If they're being assigned to him, he's a serial killer. If he's just seeking them out, then obviously, or I'm sorry, if they're being assigned to him, he's a mobster. And then if he's picking them himself, then that's a hobby, which makes him a serial killer. That personal item thing though, honestly, if I'd gone first, I would have said the same thing Steve did.
Yeah, that really is. I mean, that's, I guess that maybe if it, did you, in your research, did you ever see a motivation for that? Was it a thing to almost like a trophy? Because I could see almost with the mafia person, like wanting to keep a trophy of pride, but not in a sick way. I mean, that's sick no matter what, how you dice it, but it is a little different that he thought of himself. I mean, I'm really stretching here, but as a hunter almost.
Well, I mean, I guess he could show people after the fact. It's like, yo, you remember Tommy DeSimone or what have you? You know that necklace that he used to carry around with him on all the times? And go look in that drawer right there. You know, I have it. I'm sure he probably did that enough times, you know.
He's the one who whacked Tommy DeSimone?
No, I just used him as an example. I just used him as an example. It's like the first Italian name that came to my head. But I'm sure he did that, you know. I mean, he killed a lot of people.
He probably kept mementos for the same reason that a serial killer does. And it's a matter of having something physical to connect to the event or relive the fantasy. And you know, there's no reason he couldn't have been doing it for the same reason. What he was reliving might be a little different, but it sounds like it was the same purpose that those mementos were fulfilling.
Boy, though, I would be hard pressed to believe that somebody like that didn't go and find people to kill outside of contracts.
Yeah. Little side hobby maybe.
Yeah.
Trying to find his total body count. Yeah, see, I'm reading here, and it's they're saying as many as 60. You know, wow. So obviously a lot of them were assigned, but some of them he was probably just did his own, right? I mean, what was the Green River Killer at? I mean, that's just him. Green River Killer
at about 200, high 100.
That sounds right to me. There was some. When you get that high in a body count, there's always some, was this really by that person or wasn't it, sort of discussion that starts taking place with some victims, you know? But he may have verified all of them. I don't recall. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean he did them, right? He might have just decided to inflate his own body count.
Yeah. So the Green River Killer, he was actually convicted of 49.
Right. Those were the slam dunk cases they had. Yeah.
And he confessed and is suspected of 71 to 90. So let's just say 80, right? Tommy Karate killed 60, and he was killing guys that were, you know, legitimate tough guys, like other criminals. You know, he wasn't just picking on women. It's, you know, it's fascinating. Like, 60 plus though, that's one of the highest in the history of the mob. It has to be. I mean, Roy DeMail killed more. Harry Strauss killed more. I mean, Richard Kuklinski, whether you believe him or not, he obviously killed a lot of people himself. You know, and he used to keep personal items of these people. I mean, I don't know. He's a serial killer. That's going on my point list. All right. So next question. Okay. I think.
Oh, wait. So Frank pulled ahead. Frank is at 3.5 and I'm at 2.5.
I think this one will be a little bit easier. Here we have a man that would abduct younger women where he would take them to his home and rape them. He would later release them in the wild or he would hunt them like wild animals, either shooting them or stabbing them. Was this a mob guy or a serial killer?
How could this be a mob guy? This has got to be a serial killer. If this is a mob guy, then he's got a whole lot of flexibility from his boss and how he does his job.
I mean, I have to go with Serial Killer 2.
Yeah, it is. It's Robert Hansen, who was the famous serial killer in Alaska. And that would, I mean, I think there's been a couple of movies that kind of loosely based on him. But yeah, he was famous for like literally hunting his victims, like wild animals in the middle of Alaska. And then sometimes he'd just leave the bodies there. And then, you know, animals would come and, you know, take care of it.
You know, the HBO show True Detective that has a fourth season coming out with Jodie Foster in the lead role. It's called Night Country, and it's set up in Alaska. And this is the kind of serial killer that would be perfect for that kind of a show, you know, doing that kind of stuff. I don't know the plot. I have only seen a very vague preview, like a little teaser, 15-second preview or whatever. But it would be kind of funny if this was actually the kind of the basis for their bad guy in season 4.
Yeah, a little like just a little tangent. I was going to say, like, you're talking about True Detective. It's like the first season's the best. The second season was so-so. I actually quite enjoyed the third season a lot, actually.
Most people figure it's 1-3-2 is their order of preference for the most part.
And the third season reminds me a lot of the Franklin Credit Union scandal, which is, I don't know, maybe one day we can go down that road, because that was organized crime and punishment, or lack thereof punishment. And it's a really big conspiracy. But sorry, what were you saying, Steve?
Alaska is such a like perfect setting for a serial killer. The backwoods, the creepiness of either being all day or all night. I mean, you couldn't imagine the chances of finding, if you're in the backwoods, or probably anywhere between anything other than like two cities, there's never going to be a cop to help you or anything. I mean, I couldn't imagine. I mean, that's why like some of the creepiest ones have happened in places like Russia, because it's just open season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, like, I mean, there's so few people there. This guy could just release women that he had just raped in the wild and have them go run and scream, and literally no one's going to hear them. Like, that's how isolated much of Alaska is from everything else. It's, it's a perfect setting for, you know, like a sick psycho like that.
Definitely sick. I mean, just on so many levels.
You know, so I guess, we'll go on to question 6. This one, I think that maybe this one you guys might have a little difficulty with. While awaiting his death sentence by hanging, this person said this as their final words. Hurry it up, you Hoosier bat. How do you pronounce that? Hoosier?
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 Hoosier.
Is that like an American thing? Or
Hoosier. It's an Indiana. It's Indiana, right?
Yeah, Steve, for right? Basketball.
Yeah, it's like it's a type of person from the early settlers days, I think, isn't it? When they first started settling Indiana, they became known as Hoosiers, and then it became the motto for the sports teams later. I should probably Google that so that I don't sound like an idiot if it's actually a flower or something.
Yeah.
Like
that. I mean, that sounds legitimate.
I told you, maybe I'm full of crap.
While awaiting his death sentence by hanging, this person said as their last final words, yes, hurry it up, you Hoosier bastard. I could kill a dozen men while you're screwing around. Was this a mob guy's last words, or was this a serial killer's last words?
So this one's on me. Oh, man. I am going to say serial killer, just because not a ton of mafia guys got the death penalty that I've read, at least. I mean, some did, and I never heard of that seems like a major one that would come out of Indiana. So I am going to go serial killer for this one.
And what do you think, Frank?
Yeah, I'm mulling around whether I want to go opposites again and risk letting Steven catch up here. Do you risk letting him catch up, or do you pull into the lead by two? You know, the what he said there sounds very much like something a mobster would say, you know? I mean, but yeah, I'm going to chicken out. I think it's a serial killer as well.
Well, you're both right. This was Carl Panzeram's last words. And Carl Panzeram's like one of the early American serial killers, but he's also another guy that kind of blurs the line a little bit because he was also like a criminal. So like he would rob people and he had like all different types of little scams, but he also like killed a lot of people and he was like tough as nails. He actually wrote a book, which is a very interesting read because for a guy that was not very well educated, he's actually a pretty good writer. He has this like, it really perfectly exemplifies like somebody who basically took like a nihilistic worldview and just basically took it to its logical conclusion, really. It's a very blunt way of writing, but it's actually really effective. I've read it. And yeah, he's a pretty fascinating guy. Like I said, he's kind of a criminal, but he was also a serial killer. He claims that he was in Africa for a bit. He was a homosexual, even though I'm pretty sure he denied that he was a homosexual, but he almost exclusively just had sex with men, or sodomized them, as he said it, because that's basically what he was doing, was raping men and killing them afterwards sometimes, but not all the time. At one point, I think he had this crazy idea that he was so pissed off at this one town, they'd screwed him over somehow, and he was just going to poison their entire water reservoir and just kill them all. And that never actually happened, but he talked about doing it. He actually robbed President Taft's house at one point and stole a revolver from it. I don't know, for the audience, just look this guy up. He's got a really crazy story, and like he's probably got like probably the best last words out of all the serial killers. I mean, you know, not to make Gacy sound cool or anything, but like Gacy said, "Kiss my ass," which I mean, I got to give it to him. He just straight up just said, "Kiss my ass." So, a lot of these guys, like, I don't know, like their last moments, they'd be like, "Oh," like, I don't know, they either don't say anything or, you know, express kind of some kind of regret or I don't know, where, you know, Panzeram's like, "You know what? Just kill me. Like, I'm just going to keep on doing this." And like Gacy's just like, you know, let's screw you guys. There's a certain degree you can kind of respect that in a perverse kind of way.
I mean, they're just people with no remorse, no regret, no human decency. I think that it's an interesting it's an interesting way thing to look at, is these people who are just totally remorseless and the different areas. Some of them do go to full-blown organized crime and they sort of find a more legitimate outlet to these feelings, and then other people find one that's just totally off the wall and antisocial. I guess antisocial is maybe the word.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of these mob guys have extreme like antisocial personality disorders. Not all of them, but I think a lot of them do. I think that's how you kind of end up finding yourself in a situation where you're, you know, joining a secret society that, you know, commits crimes and views down on the rest of everyone not part of your little clique, right?
Clear sign that guy is antisocial is that given everything he did, all the terrible things that he did to people, all the pain he inflicted, how awful a person he was, he somehow thought calling somebody from Indiana a Hoosier bastard was an insult.
Yeah, that's the best he could come up with. Yeah.
So I think he's lame. I'm gonna put him in the lame category when it comes to final last words.
But it does sound harder.
sounds like a fascinating life in a, you know, in a car wreck sort of way.
But on this, that there were people there at the time, they were protesting, they were against the death penalty, and Carl Panzeram apparently was like yelling at these people, being like what's the matter with you? It's like, I want to die. Like, I'm just gonna keep on doing this. Like, what are you people even arguing about this? So there's like people showing up to like basically his death sentence, like arguing like, please don't kill this man. And he's like basically telling them, it's like, just bugger off. Like, just, you guys are slowing this down. You know, which is like Martin Goldstein, which is like when we were doing the Murder Inc. series, which is the exact opposite. He just turned into like a full on coward where he's just like, please don't do it. And he's acting all hysterical. And I mean, I don't know how I would react in that situation, but I mean, Carl Panzer.
I'd like to think you wouldn't kill anybody in the first place, Chris.
No. No, I mean, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like the death sentence or what have you, right? It's Carl Panzeram's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, he faced it like a man, right? Where Martin Goldstein was like a coward, right? You know, pretending like he didn't do all these horrible things that he clearly, you know, did do and bragged about. So I
that could be a little bit the difference between a serial killer and a mob hitman, right? I mean, mob hitman, you know, the reason that they're doing it is a little different. And when they get caught, they, you know, they could turn coward like that. I don't think too many serial killers have done anything other than, you know, try to beat their case maybe, but they've embraced their role a lot of times. I mean, it's like, all right, I'm caught. I might as well get as much infamy out of this as possible and let people know how quote unquote awesome I am, you know? And I just think it's another difference you could point out. I don't know that every hitman turns into a crybaby. I'm not saying that, but I haven't seen many serial killers who have, just one or two.
Yeah. The only guy I can think of right off the top of my head, and I wouldn't even say per se he turned into a crybaby, but like Ted Bundy, you know, he started saying, yeah, like, oh, like I started watching pornography when I was young and this is why I like led it into this and this happened to me. Yeah. And it's just like,
yeah. And he tried to string it along with, I'll tell you where this body is and I'll tell you where that body is, but you know, trying to keep himself alive. We had a serial killer up in Spokane, back in the 90s. That might make for an interesting discussion sometime, but, Robert Lee Yates is his name, and he was a big blubbering baby at his sentencing. You know, but his cover story was, you know, upstanding community member, family man, you know, and all that. And so, you know, he had his role down. I mean, I think they're all sociopaths, you know, in the same way that Tony Soprano's a sociopath. You know, they learn how to pretend to be normal people who have emotions and react appropriately to whatever's going on. So I don't know if he was legitimately upset or not. I kind of doubt it, but he sure did put on a show. Blubbering like a baby.
I think you could almost say Jeffrey Dahmer at his trial, like maybe he was somebody who just could not fight his compulsions. And when he had to finally stop after getting busted, it all did hit him that what he was doing was so awful.
So like I watched that Netflix series, the Dahmer one that everyone was watching, and they tried to make it seem like his whole family situation was like really messed up, and like, yeah, his mom had like mental health problems that he probably inherited a bit from, because some of that stuff is passed on genetically. But like, I mean, the truth of the matter is like Dahmer didn't have anything that was like, it's not like he was abused as a kid or his dad was bad to him or even his mom, right? Like he's one of those cases where like I think he was like just born like that. And you know, if we had people that could notice things earlier, like Dahmer should have institutionalized them pretty much like right from the get-go.
That infrastructure just isn't there to do that preventatively, unfortunately. I was just going to express a little disgust for the inconsistency with which Netflix has been producing historical documentaries and docudramas and stuff. There's some really good stuff on there. The stuff about the Roman Empire and the stuff about the Ottoman Empire is really well done, if a bit dramatized, but there's some things on there. I mean, I didn't watch the Dahmer one. The reviews I read on it that talked about the historicity of it were rather critical. So
yeah, that was my biggest complaint, right? My wife likes that stuff. So I just ended up watching some of it with her, and I'm just sitting there. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I mean, is this really something that like the vast majority of people should be watching? Like I'm literally watching a guy fry up in flesh, and you know, like it's, I don't know, like maybe I'm just, I don't know. Like maybe this is just something that shouldn't be popular. I'm just saying that out loud.
Well, and you talk about the concept of justice and the different kinds of justice that exist. And, you know, you on a karmic level, I guess justice was served on him in more than one way. I mean, he didn't last very long in the prison system after being convicted.
I wonder if Jeffrey Dahmer was the type of person where it was almost like a perfect storm, where his family life was kind of messed up. His dad was checked out. Like you said, his mom had mental illness. Like if somebody had caught him early and got him into counseling and dealt with those issues before they really took off. If he might not have done what he did, it's just that he just continuously slipped through the cracks.
See, I think there's some people like in Dahmer's. I don't think there's a lot of them, but I think somebody like Dahmer is just, there's something is that maybe we just don't understand it yet, but there, I don't think any amount of counseling was going to fix that guy. Like, I think he was going to end up doing what he did one way or another. I mean, like Frank said, we just don't have that kind of preventative infrastructure in place where, you know, there's certain things that you can see and you catch it right away. And I mean, should have been, I mean, we used to put people in institutions a lot more quickly than we do now. I mean, I think that's one of the problems we have now is we don't put people in institutions. I don't think there's any fixing Dahmer. I think like almost right from the get-go, something's seriously wrong with this guy.
And unfortunately, not only do we not have preventative mechanisms in place to any great degree, but even our reactive mechanisms in the structure supporting it, the infrastructure there is pretty overtaxed and pretty limited. So a guy like him can pretty easily slip through the system. When I was teaching leadership after I retired from law enforcement for a few years, I almost always taught with another instructor. And I taught with a captain from Milwaukee. She had some interesting stories to tell regarding that time period and how they screwed up with Dahmer, and then places where they were getting accused of screwed up where they didn't, and where they're getting let off the hook where they screwed up. And it was kind of an interesting kind of secondhand story to hear rather than, you know, a Netflix, maybe not very accurate show.
So we're at 4.5 for Frank, and I'm still stuck at 3.5. Steve here again with a quick word from our sponsors.
Yeah, so here we have a group of men that would lure men to an apartment in a bar that they own. They would shoot, then wrap a towel around his head point blank to help contain some of the bleeding. Once that was done, they would stab the man in the heart to slow down the bleeding. Oh, no, we're not done yet. They would hang the body up afterwards and cut it into small pieces that would be scattered around various dumps in the city. Was this the work of mob guys or serial killers?
Okay, so clarification request here. This is something that occurred on more than one occasion. This is not a singular event.
This happened multiple times.
Okay. Well, it sounds very serial killer-esque, but I think you're trying to trick me, Chris. I think this is a mob thing. I think they just picked the people that they thought needed to disappear, and then they did it in a way that made a statement. So this is your opportunity, Steve.
I'm kind of in the same spot in the reverse. Do I go with my gut, or do I go with the opposite to try and get caught up? I'm going with mafia on this one.
Yeah, well, basically what I described is, yeah, mob hit. This is called the Gemini method that Roy DiMeo and the Gemini crew made famous. Yeah, they would lure guys to the apartment that was in the back of the bar, and they came up with this elaborate system to basically, you know, contain as much of the blood and the mess that comes with killing people. And this is like kind of through trial and error too, right? Like they figured, like, after doing it a couple of times, they're like, oh, if we wrap a towel around the head right away, like it contains most of the bleeding. And it's like, well, how do we slow down like just the bleeding itself? It's like, oh, we're gonna stab a guy in the heart, and then if we hang it up, then, you know, we can run the water and the blood just goes down the drain. And then the body parts, you know, they learned got to throw them around different dumps around the city. And then once it goes to the dump, they're almost next to impossible to find. And I mean, I think they learned one time they found a torso one time, and then they learned, oh, wait, we forgot to stab the lungs. Otherwise, the lungs will help the torso float back up. But if you stab them enough times, they'll just sink to the bottoms. They fill up with water, right? They've discovered this method through trial and error. Once they perfected it, the rest is history. I mean, they became probably the most efficient mob killing machine in history. You know, some people put the body counts for the Gemini crew up to, you know, 250, which is just insane.
Holy cow.
250 people. You know, it was a group of guys that were doing it, but Roy DeMeo was personally involved in most of these killings.
And it was over a fairly short amount of time, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was not that long. It was more than just say like a couple of years, but yeah, it was you know, it was a fairly quick. I mean, technically, a lot of these guys, they kind of go super overboard with the killing, like say like the Gemini crew. They don't tend to last super long, but yeah, you know, it wasn't over like say like 40 years or 30 years or anything like that. You know, Roy DeMeo would end up getting killed by his mafia partners, but yeah, you know, it's crazy to think like, you know, 250 people, maybe, who knows, could be more, you know. And a lot of these bodies they never found. They're never going to find them. Like at one point they were thinking about actually just start digging up the dump to try to find body parts, and I think they did it for like a week and they're like, yeah, we're not going to find anything.
Not an apartment that was an abattoir.
And those dumps, yeah. I mean, it's honestly a smart place to go, because those dumps in most metropolitan areas, I mean, they're getting feet of garbage a day. I mean, and there's usually not a lot of other places to move the garbage to other places. And so if you don't let people, if you don't let them dump in that dump, it causes a major problem, so that you couldn't stop filling a dump for a week to go digging around in there. If you even, you know, maybe a place like the NYPD would have the resources to even do that.
Yeah, but any place that would have the resources would also live in an area that has a dump that huge and that, you know, that daunting of a task. So, I mean, it's probably all relative in that regard. It is a smart place to go. And the dismemberment is such a smart thing too. I mean, even today with DNA, it's still a smart way to get rid of a body. That's amazing to me that number that they cranked out, that number.
You know, it's up for debate how many they actually did. I've heard different numbers, but you know, let's just call it, I'd say 200. Yeah. 200, or pretty darn close to 200 bodies, which is wild. And considering like one of the first ones that they ended up doing, they almost got caught where I think it was like a thigh of one person that they dumped in a dump. And this homeless guy saw this thing wrapped up in like meat wrapping packaging and thinking like, oh, like I've scored big. Like, look at the size of this piece of meat. And then apparently when he opened it up, he realized pretty quickly that it was
long thigh.
he confirmed it because there was like a tattoo on it. So they started using like you know, like the knives that you like scale fish and stuff like that to get the tattoos off and any kind of identifiable markings.
And what kind of world was that where people didn't notice that maybe several people a month went into the Gemini Lounge but never left?
Yeah, it's not the Hotel California. I mean, come on.
You know, they only like a lot of the times they were just taking out other criminals, and they were also taking out, you know, like criminals ended up becoming informants. And you know, like the DeMeo crew, you know, they had cops on the inside, right? They were feeding them this information, so like they must have known, had a pretty good idea, like, oh, where did so-and-so go? It's like, oh, we don't know, type thing, right? And there was a lot of people that are making money off of them too, right? Because their big score was running well, they ran drugs and they did pornography, but their biggest, I guess the thing that they're most famous for is the stolen cars, like mass stealing cars and chopping them up or repurposing them. And at one point, like, he literally was an international criminal where he was like shipping cars, I believe it was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was to United Arab Emirates. And like to the point where they're like, I want a Toyota Camry that's red with these types of rims. And that's how like sophisticated this car theft operation was. So there's a lot of people that are getting kickbacks. You know, it's like, oh, we're all making money, and you know, this person's going to screw that up. And I'm assuming that's that's probably exactly why it was allowed to go on for as long as it was. Everyone was making too much money off of it.
It's crazy.
People were terrified of Roy DeMeo because they knew what happened at the Gemini Lounge.
All right, so 5.5 to 4.5.
And then we're at the final question.
Yep. Here we have a group of men that captured and tortured a man for hours. Then after they thought he was killed, they buried him in a shallow grave. It turned out that he wasn't dead and was actually buried alive. Was this the work of the mob or serial killers?
That sounds like a story I've heard of, and I want to say it is the mob.
Yeah, it comes across to me as a little bit of an incompetent hit more than it does a serial killer. I mean, and I mentioned earlier that only 10% of serial killers are duos. So that the group of men part kind of puts me more towards the mafia angle as well. So mob it is. Well, so
yeah, this was done by the mob, and actually you can revisit this, this murder. Actually, this is the one that Abe Relis and his crew committed against one of the Shapiro brothers, where they were burying him, and somebody, a pedestrian, happened to see kind of what they were doing, and so they didn't actually finish the job fully. Pretty sure they thought he was dead, but when they exhumed the body, the doctors realized pretty quickly that no, this man had been buried alive. Which is a
horrible way to go.
Think about. I don't know whether
you gotta hope
afterwards or not, but
you gotta hope the guy was at least like unconscious from his injuries and didn't, you know, wasn't aware of what was going on there as he was smothered essentially. Because that's just a horrible. That's terrible.
It's one of the worst mob killings I'm aware of. It really is. Buried alive.
We'll probably get into this at some point, but the real person who Joe Pesci played in Casino, I think he was buried alive too. Him and his brother.
Out in the desert?
Yeah. Or in a cornfield. That's bad. That's pretty,
that's about as bad as it gets.
I mean, you're doing that full hatred.
Yeah, and then there's like other mob guys. We've talked about him before. I mean, Anthony Gaspipe Casso, where you go, and this guy sounds like a serial killer. Like even the FBI, when they were thinking about using him as an informant, like they heard him like laughing about killing people. And I think it was one, he claims to have some drug runner or whatever that he screwed up, or he was going to inform, or he was going to say something. And it was like down in Florida, and he trying to remember this story correctly, but I believe he claimed that he buried this guy alive too, and he was like laughing about it. And this is when the FBI goes, it said to themselves, it's like, there's no we can't do that, we can't do this with this guy. I'm like, I know we did it with Sammy the Bull, but this guy's just, it's too much, it's too far, it makes us look bad. I mean, and Sammy the Bull Gravano made them look bad too, but this guy's gonna make us like look really bad. Because you read about somebody like Gaspipe Casso, and you go, like, this guy was like, yeah, he was a mob. He wasn't the mob, but he was like right underneath the mob boss. But it was kind of him and his partner were like co-mob bosses. I mean, was this guy a serial killer or not? Like, I've read his book. Philip Carlo wrote it, and you listen to this guy talk about himself, and he sounds like a serial killer because he's just completely delusional about who he is. Like, he just like, just like, almost virtually zero self-awareness. I could be, that's how it came across to me.
Well, Frank snuck ahead right above got across the finish line, and he wins at 5.5 to 4.5. Well, I'm very interested to hear how our friends, the friends of ours at home, did on this game. So definitely send in on social media, email crime@a2zhistorypage.com or all the other ways to get in contact, because I'd be very interested to hear how you did on the game. And if you'd like to hear more episodes like this.
5.5 is the score to beat.
Yeah, 5.5. Let's
gotta be some experts out there that can do that. That's not that difficult. You know, what occurred to me as we're talking about this, that all of these folks are sociopaths. Maybe some of the hitmen that did it once or twice or whatever, or backed into a corner sort of thing, you could make an argument that they weren't. But the anybody who has a body count of any magnitude, they're a sociopath. The biggest difference between these two, hitmen and serial killers, is that when you make a movie about a serial killer, they're the bad guy. When you make a movie about a mafia hitman, he's the good guy.
Yeah, there's definitely something to say about that.
Yeah, pretty accurate observation.
So we're going to leave it at that. We definitely would love to hear your feedback. And the biggest thing you can do to help us is tell your friends about Organized Crime and Punishment so that your friends can become friends of ours.
Yeah, forget about it, guys.
Yeah, forget about it.
You've been listening to Organized Crime and Punishment, a history and crime podcast. To learn more about what you heard today, find links to social media, and how to support the show, go to our website, A2ZHistoryPage.com. Become a friend of ours by sending us an email to crime@A2ZHistoryPage.com. All of this and more can be found in the show notes. We'll see you next time on Organized Crime and Punishment. Forget about it.
Text the word history using the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to a wonderful product that can help you finally succeed in shedding that extra weight. Jeff in Indiana lost 55 pounds with Calitrin. Lily in Tennessee shed 42 pounds. Beth is sleeping much better, and her joint aches have eased up considerably. Text the word history to the code 30605 right now to see this week's special offer on Calitrin. Calitrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calitrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calitrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply, and this week, take advantage of our special offer. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer.